Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Don't Mess with the X by DJ Jameson. Narrated by Iggy Toma. Chapter 1. Lori. I stared at my long-lost husband, heart stuttering. I couldn't believe I was finally here, mere yards away, breathing the same air as Tucker Ellis after nearly 20 years apart. It had only taken 6 hours of travel, a threat from my horrid family I'd escaped, and some botched paperwork to bring me to this moment. I drank in the view greedily, cataloging the familiar lines of Tucker's face, the strong jaw, the broad planes of his cheekbones, the arch of his brows, as well as the few new ones that had emerged over the years. He'd taken on a distinguished air he didn't possess in his 20s, but it suited him. He looked happy, I thought, or happy-ish at least, as he spoke to a small crowd in front of a two-story Victorian in an older section of Granville, Nebraska, that, truth be told, had seen better days. The home behind him was a gorgeous piece of architecture, complete with turret and dramatic circular side porch, all framed by flowering shrubs that sweetly perfumed the air. But the one across the street was shabbier, and the one 2 houses down looked ready to collapse. Tucker was a gorgeous piece of man, standing out every bit as much as the house behind him with the broad shoulders and confident stature, not to mention head of thick, glossy brown hair that had first attracted me to him. I broke out in a sweat when I wondered what I would say to him. How could I adequately explain that after I'd broken both our hearts and given him an annulment to sign, our marriage had never ended? Not on paper, anyway. I hung on Tucker's words, though they meant little to me beyond the fact his voice soothed me, so familiar after all this time. "Granville has won the Small Town Innovation Grant we've been working toward," Tucker was saying. "This gives us some of the funds we need to make real changes for the better. We'll be searching for more resources, investments, and matching funds going forward. But this is a great start. I want to thank Hunter." I didn't hear the rest as I pushed through the crowd, my pulse rushing in my ears. I traveled all day, even stopped at a hotel in Omaha to shower and dress in a fresh suit. And in all that time, I'd had no idea how my reunion with Tucker would go, or even when or where it would happen. I didn't have his phone number or his address, and the man was a ghost on social media. Only the memory of his hometown and its online presence had allowed me to keep tabs on him. That's how I'd known Granville was celebrating its 150th birthday today, and that Tucker would be part of the festivities in his role as city manager. I'd been so focused on getting here and finding him that I'd given little thought to how I'd approach or what I'd say when I did. But Tucker had just given me the perfect opening. "If you're looking for investors, I have a proposal for you," I said as I stepped out of the crowd, trying to project a confidence I didn't feel. Inside, I was shaking like a schoolboy speaking the first words to his crush. Tucker's expression went from pleasant curiosity to shock as recognition dawned. "Lori? Ah, so you do remember your husband," I teased before I could think better of it. I ascended the porch stairs, crowd forgotten, all my attention zeroed in on one man. Tucker was speaking to me. The urge to get closer, to touch, was irresistible. Tucker stuttered out a nonsensical reply.
Why?
I grasped his hand, wanting to calm him, and kissed his knuckles. Softly, I murmured, "Honey, I'm home." I didn't know why I said the words. I'd never been to Granville before, but they resonated through me. I was home. Tucker was my home. It had always felt that way. And just now I was realizing that I'd been aimless, missing that sense of belonging, since the day he'd packed his bags and left me in my pretentious New York penthouse. Judging by the look on his face, he didn't feel the same. His shock shifted to confusion, then irritation. "That's not funny," he muttered, gaze darting to the crowd behind us, the one I'd managed to forget even existed while my heart beat only for Tucker. "I'm not laughing," I said, keeping my voice soft as I became more aware of the whispers breaking out. "Who is that?
Did he say he was Tucker's husband?
Our Tucker would never...
I met his eyes, bracing myself for his reaction. We're still married, Tuck. He shook his head in denial, eyes wide. I wanted to kiss more than his knuckles. I wanted to kiss that incredulous look off his face. I'd been shocked, too, when I discovered the annulment had never been filed all those years ago. But now, it felt a little like fate. Like Tucker and I were meant to be together. It was a fanciful thought. Too fanciful after nearly 20 years apart. I had no idea what Tucker thought of me, but I couldn't imagine it was good. In his mind, I'd chosen my money and status over him. There was more to the story, though I doubted that would make much difference to him. The result had been the same after all. Tucker and I living separate lives instead of the single one we'd vowed to build together. "Come with me," he growled, making goosebumps erupt along my skin. He grabbed my wrist and tugged me toward the edge of the porch. "We've made enough of a scene." I glanced toward the crowd guiltily. I'd never intended to be so dramatic when I sought Tucker out. Patience had never been my strong suit. I was a man of action. It worked in my favor in many situations. By trusting my gut, I could be bold and decisive in my business dealings. But it also made me impulsive at times, which Tucker would say was how we ended up here in the first place. But falling for him hadn't been reckless or misguided. We might have had a whirlwind romance, but nothing had ever felt so right. Marrying Tucker was one of the most sensible things I'd ever done, and I had no regrets, other than failing to hold on to him. Tucker. I'd done exactly one impulsive, rash, foolish thing in my life, and now he was staring me in the face. My husband. Not ex-husband, because no, that would be too easy. Lawrence Whitaker Kensington III was still gorgeous, his face one of interesting angles, almost too sharp at times. And yet when he smiled, the picture shifted, his mouth wide and generous, his eyes full of that old mischievous sparkle. He could charm anyone with that smile. He'd certainly charmed me. I remembered every detail, from the cleft in his chin to the freckle just under his right eye. But I'd never thought I'd see them again. Beyond him, half the dang town was watching us while we stood on Hunter Rhodes's front porch. I'd been talking about the city's goal to find investors to move forward with our 5-year plan when, like an angel or demon, Lori emerged from the masses to offer his assistance. And then he called himself my husband in front of everyone. I dragged Lori off the porch and around the far side of the house, farthest from the crowd of curious onlookers. I loved my neighbors, but they were nosy even without someone tossing them a surprise husband to salivate over. I could hear the gossip rippling through the crowd already.
Do you think it's true?
Surely not.
Oh dear, what will Beverly say?
My mother would have a lot to say when she found out I'd kept my foolish marriage a secret all this time. But I couldn't think about that now.
"Just so I know what's happening here," Lori said in that smoky, smooth voice I hadn't heard outside my dreams in nearly 2 decades. "Are you pulling me into the bushes to have your way with me, or to dispose of my body?"
I released the sleeve of his pricey suit, the type that was perfectly tailored to his trim form and so expensive it probably equaled 2 months' pay for a lot of folks around here, and stepped back with a huff of annoyance.
"What the fuck was that all about?" I said, waving a hand wildly back toward the porch, where he'd caught me by surprise.
"Is this some kind of sick joke?"
Lori shook his head. "Do you really think I flew across the country and interrupted what looks to be a stimulating night out to play a prank on you?"
"Sorry if this doesn't measure up to your high society parties," I said testily. "This isn't New York. This is my town. These are my people. They might seem like country bumpkins to you, but..."
"I didn't mean it that way. I hate that high society crap. You know that about me."
Did I? After so long apart, I wasn't sure I could trust what I thought I knew. The Lori of our 20s had wanted nothing to do with that life. His family had other ideas, though. And in the end, he always caved to them. So for all I knew, he spent his weekends at galas. He certainly looked the part. As my gaze dipped to take in the fine fabric of his double-breasted suit, Lori seemed to track my gaze. He plucked at his lapel.
Not the best choice, wearing this, huh?
He chuckled awkwardly.
You probably think I'm a rich snob. I just wanted to look good for... Well, I guess it doesn't matter. It was poor judgment.
We were getting off track. There was only one thing I wanted to understand, and it wasn't Lori's wardrobe decisions. Are we really still married? He looked me in the eye, serious now.
We are.
How? He cleared his throat and shifted.
Do you really want to have this entire conversation in the shrubbery with dozens of potential eavesdroppers?
Nice of you to consider that now, I grumbled as I turned, catching sight of a few faces peeking around the corner. Lori winced.
Sorry, I didn't think about the crowd. I just saw you.
Flattery will get you nowhere.
It's not flattery, just the truth.
Before I could respond, Iola Fletcher craned her neck around the corner of the house, looking strangely bird-like as she peered down her nose.
Are you all right back there, Tucker?
She called.
If that man's bothering you, you tell me and we'll put a stop to it.
As if Iola's 5-foot-nothing, 70-years-plus self could really protect me. Then again, I was sure she'd try. I'm fine, I called back quickly before we had to test that theory. We're just talking. When she didn't leave, I added, privately. Iola harumphed, but she withdrew. Still, that didn't mean she or any number of people wouldn't be listening in. I'd never told anyone in Granville about my ill-fated union with the rich playboy I'd met while at an urban planning conference during grad school. No one knew that I'd indulged in the most romantic weekend of my life with him. Then, unable to let go, had stayed in contact long distance for the 4 months until my graduation, at which point he'd flown me to New York like he was some kind of goddamned Prince Charming.
When he'd taken me for a romantic getaway in Massachusetts, a state that had legalized same-sex unions, and dropped to one knee,
I'd agreed to marry him. It had all been a beautiful dream, the kind of romance you only found in books and movies. And it was embarrassing to admit that I'd been swept off my feet every bit as much as any Disney princess. Hell, maybe more. But every dream comes to an end. My naive heart hadn't realized that yet. It had felt too good to be true, because it was. Lori's family had been horrified when they discovered what we'd done. They'd given him an ultimatum: send me packing or give up everything. His future with the family company, his trust fund, his home, his family ties. There had been only one reasonable answer, but it had still shattered me. It hurt him, too. I'd seen it on his face. There had been a horrible bleakness to his eyes when he ended things. He was always such a vibrant, lively person, but that day he'd seemed empty, as if someone had hollowed out everything I loved about him and left only a husk. He'd produced the annulment papers, and I'd signed them with a shaking hand. Part of me had known he couldn't make any other choice in the end, no matter how he'd vowed to fight for me. I'd packed my bags, and despite my big plans to work as an urban planner in a metropolis, I'd lost my taste for big city adventure. I'd gone home to the people I loved and trusted, the people who'd never make me choose between my happiness and the appearances they wanted to uphold. Even if Lori hadn't ended things, our worlds didn't mesh. I was a small-town boy with little care for money and society, and he was born into wealth and prestige. Marrying him had been impulsive and spontaneous, and a terrible decision. I'd been lost in the flush of first love, excited by the notion that we could get married at all, and misguided in my belief that infatuation could last forever. But I was older and wiser now. I wouldn't be that young, impulsive kid ever again. I'd promised myself I'd keep my head on straight and make reasoned, logical choices after the disaster with Lori. And so far, I'd managed to do that. I didn't want to feed the gossip already spreading about my youthful indiscretion. "We can go to my place to talk this out," I said reluctantly. He stepped closer, lips turning up at the corners.
"I've missed you, Tuck. Maybe this isn't so bad. If you're single, we could even enjoy this little detour down memory lane."
I put up a hand to hold him back when he got too close. The warmth of his body bled through the fine cotton of his shirt. Beneath my palm, his heart thumped, quicker than I would have expected it to be, considering his calm demeanor. Lori always had known how to put on a good face. Was he nervous, or simply excited by the idea of a night with me? I shouldn't want it to be the latter, but hell, he was a handsome man and a great lover. Electricity had always hummed between us, pure lightning when we indulged in each other. That couldn't happen now, though it was tempting. In some ways, it'd be easier if I hated Lori, if I thought he'd dumped me out of greed or callousness. With hate between us, I could keep up a comfortable barrier, but knowing that he was a victim of his family as much as or more than I was, that would make it much more difficult to maintain my perspective. But regardless of why he was here, nothing had changed. Lori was still a Kensington. He was still part of a world I'd never belong in. And standing in the bushes, dressed in fine Armani tailoring, it was clear he didn't fit into mine. "Don't," I said firmly. "It doesn't matter that I'm single. Nothing's happening except you explaining what happened and producing the paperwork so we can fix it."
"Well, that's the thing."
My guard instantly went up. "What's the thing?"
"I don't want to fix it." Chapter 2. Lori. Tucker's whole house could have fit into the penthouse I once owned in New York, but I liked it far more. Instead of a sleek modern design that had always left me cold, the bungalow had a craftsman style with glossy wooden floors, a fireplace framed by built-in bookshelves, and large windows. While Tucker dealt with his excited golden retriever, lavishing her with so much love I was a little envious, I took in the brown leather love seat and matching recliner in the living room. His coffee table looked as if it had been repurposed from a door, and a nearby lamp seemed to be created from an old outdoor faucet, with a light bulb surrounded by a glass shade extending from its spout. Tucker returned from the kitchen with the crunching of a happily eating dog echoing behind him. "We should talk."
I nodded, but I found myself reluctant to jump straight into the conversation we needed to have. I wasn't usually one to beat around the bush, but there was a very good chance Tucker would throw me out on my ass once he learned what he wanted to know.
"You have some interesting decor," I said. Tucker looked embarrassed.
"It's a hobby."
"Wait, you made these things?" I scanned the room, catching sight of a few more recycled use items. A clock that had once been an old pie tin, and a coat rack near the door made from a section of old fencing. "That's very..."
"Rustic?" Tucker gave a gruff laugh. "I am a country boy."
"I was going to say talented. I didn't know you could do this."
"Well, we barely know each other after all these years, Lawrence."
Ouch. He was using my full name. Tucker wasn't going to make this easy, was he? "I want to know more about you," I said earnestly. "When did you learn to do this? I've never seen anything online." Tucker looked puzzled.
"Why would you?"
Should I admit I'd tried to stalk him on socials over the years? Everyone did that. It wasn't weird, right?
"I don't know. Some people showcase their art on social media."
"It's not really my style to show off."
No kidding. Tucker was frustratingly locked down in a world full of private lives on display. I'd only been able to pick up tidbits about him in the news and on the city of Granville's social profiles. He sat down in his recliner, waving toward the love seat.
"Have a seat. Let's talk."
Just as my heart began to warm at the thought of getting to know about Tucker's life, all the small ins and outs I had missed, like this hobby of his, he said,
"Explain what you think happened with this marriage, and why we shouldn't just refile for divorce right now."
It was clear from Tucker's direct gaze that he wouldn't be put off. I took a minute to gather my thoughts and started with the easy part. My grandfather's lawyer drew up the annulment paperwork, and we signed, but I never followed up after. My family has the money and connections to make things happen, so it didn't occur to me to doubt it. Besides, I didn't want to think about it, Tuck, much less reaffirm it happened, you know? Tucker looked away, jaw tight.
Reliving this wasn't easy for either of us.
Go on.
I cleared my throat. When I discovered we were still married, I made some inquiries, and it seems we didn't qualify for the annulment according to Massachusetts law. We'd have needed to prove fraud or mental incapacity on one of our parts, and since that wasn't the case, I shrugged. Tucker seemed skeptical.
Surely the Kensington lawyer would have known that.
Yeah, it's odd. It could have been a true oversight, but it seems unlikely. I can't discount the possibility they decided that the appearance of annulment was just as valuable as the real deal. After all, no other states recognized our marriage. Then, anyway. Now is a whole other matter. Tucker scraped a hand over his jaw, scratching at the dark stubble that was beginning to show at the end of a long evening.
How did you discover the truth, anyway?
I shifted. Here was the hard part. Well, a funny thing, I chortled without humor. My great-aunt Izzy died a while back, and she named me in the will as her sole beneficiary. There was one condition, though.
Let me guess, Tucker said dryly. You need to be married to inherit?
I do. I licked my lips. I got close with Izzy after you left. She isn't like the rest of my family. She kind of went her own way, and I admired that. But she knew what happened with us, and she always wanted me to try again. I guess this is her idea of motivation. I snorted with amusement. The family thought they'd get that inheritance, and so did I, but that marriage stipulation made me nostalgic. I started thinking about you. Then I got this bee in my bonnet about what exactly happened with the annulment, and here we are. Still married. Surprise! I smiled brightly, but Tucker looked less pleased.
So this is about money. With our history, I should have guessed as much.
I winced, his words cutting more than he could know. Of course he would think that's what motivated me. As far as he knew, money and privilege were why it ended our marriage. Even if I tried to explain all my reasons now, the added layers of horrible were unlikely to improve his opinion of the Kensingtons. It's not about the money, not really, I said. I know you may find it hard to believe, but I've made a good life for myself. I don't need Izzy's estate. It's about the principle of the thing. My family fucked us over, Tuck. They ruined our marriage. But now our marriage can fuck them over right back. He looked skeptical.
We don't have a marriage.
But we could, I said, speaking faster, hoping to persuade him before he could tell me he had no intention of ever helping me with anything again, which would be fair. We'd have to make it look good. My family will do everything they can to contest the will, to prove we're a sham, but...
Wait, slow down. What exactly do you want from me? It sounds like postponing the paperwork wouldn't be enough.
I need you to be my husband, I said. He blinked. For appearances only, I said. It pained me to add, we can still rectify the paperwork once my family has given up their challenge, or the will finishes going through probate and they've lost interest.
I don't know. Probate takes a long time, doesn't it?
It can take months, yeah, I admitted, knowing it might be a deal-breaker for him. But I can make it worth your while. He raised an eyebrow.
How would you do that?
You said you needed investors for these projects in Granville, right? This inheritance could fund anything you need. Wouldn't you rather the money go to making your hometown a better place than to my greedy relatives?
You'd do that? Sacrifice a big chunk of that inheritance for a city you don't even know?
Of course I would. I don't need the money, Tucker. I closed my mouth before I could say what I really thought. All I need is you.
Tucker. I lay in my bed, tossing and turning. I told Lori I needed to sleep on his proposal. Now there was irony. A proposal from the man who'd ended our marriage, or attempted to, anyway. But my thoughts were too chaotic to rest. If I went along with his plan, it wasn't simply a matter of delaying the paperwork, or explaining to my friends and neighbors that I'd gotten married when they weren't looking. We'd have to live like a married couple. Lori was adamant that his family would be checking up on him, so adamant he hadn't wanted to get a hotel for the night. "I don't have a good place for you to sleep," I'd protested. "My spare room is set up as an office."
"Only one bed?" Lori had wiggled his eyebrows. "Oh, no."
I'd snorted. "That's not happening." Instead, I directed him to a futon in my office that my dog Elle used as a bed when I was working from home. I did at least a few hours of work every weekend because there was always something I'd left undone the week before. Granville was a small town, and as such, I had a lot of hats to wear, though the recent hiring of Hunter Rhodes had eased the burden. I had to run the lint brush over the thin mattress before covering it with a sheet. "Not exactly five-star accommodations. You sure you don't want to get a hotel?" Lori smirked.
"You're not scaring me away that easily, Tuck."
Tuck. He kept using the shortened form of my name, infusing it with so much affection it made it all too easy to remember why I'd fallen for him so hard and fast. Lori was charming, and he had this way of looking at a person as if they were the center of the universe, as if he hung on their every word. It was heady stuff, but I couldn't let it get to me. Lori was still a Kensington, and the Kensingtons were all about money. Even if he had a heart, unlike some of his nasty relatives, he lived in a completely different world from me. I'd wished him luck on getting some sleep, but I was the one tossing and turning in my comfortable king-size dream cloud mattress with memory foam and inner coil support. I'd splurged on the damn thing because getting old was hell on the body, though it certainly hadn't seemed to do Lori much harm. His skin was ridiculously clear and smooth, hardly a wrinkle in sight. I guess all those expensive skin creams he liked had been worth it. Something wet touched the back of my neck, making me jolt, heart hammering at the thought of Lori sneaking into my bed. My body flashed hot at the idea, and I wasn't sure I'd have it in me to resist him. But it was just Elle. An odd sort of disappointment swept through me. If Lori seduced me while I was sleepy and vulnerable, it'd be easy to let it happen. It was good he hadn't, though. I had to stay strong and keep my distance, regardless of how my body craved his against me. Memories of how good he felt curled around me made me more restless. Elle whined, clearly disturbed by my tossing and turning. I let her sleep on the other side of the bed because it seemed like wasted space otherwise, but now I felt guilty that she had a comfier spot than Lori. He didn't have to stay here, though. He made his bed, and now he has to lie in it. I gave up on sleep, and Elle lifted her head when I got out of bed. But when I left the room, she didn't follow. She enjoyed a good night's sleep, often going to bed without me if I stayed up too late. But she'd be raring to go in the morning. I headed for the kitchen to grab a glass of water, startling when I saw Lori laid out on the love seat. The futon must have been really bad if he'd abandoned it for this. His legs hung over one armrest, and his head was tilted at an odd angle against the other. He couldn't possibly be comfortable, but he was dead asleep, face slack, breathing heavy and even. I took a minute to study him in the dark, vaguely aware it was creepy to watch him sleep, yet unable to pass up the opportunity to drink him in. I had to keep my guard up when he was awake. Lori's flirtation was light and playful, but I was pretty sure his offer to revisit Memory Lane had been serious. I couldn't go there with him again, despite the X-rated memories that kept flitting through my head. He was a beautiful man. He'd stripped off the suit, and his shoulders and chest were on display above the blanket he'd taken from the futon. Even in the dark, I could see that his body was toned. He was slender, more refined than me, his power generally lying with his sheer presence. But I'd always liked that about him. Liked that he could command a room, or me, with nothing but the intensity of those hazel-green blue eyes and a clever tongue. Could I really do this? Really pretend our marriage meant something more than regret? Lori had been pretty clear that we'd have to make this relationship look legitimate as it could appear after we were separated nearly 20 years, that was. But Lori had the answer for that, too.
"We stick as close to the truth as we can. We were estranged for a long time, but we decided to reconcile. The timing is suspect, yes, but if we present a united front and a convincing marriage now, There's nothing in the will that states we have to have a perfect marriage. It just can't be
Sample complete. Ready to continue?